Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga. Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge. Chapter 22, page 475. Vijnana or Gnosis. In our perfect self-transcendence, we pass out and up from the ignorance, or half-enlightenment, of our mental conscious being into a greater wisdom self and truth power above it, there to dwell in the unwalled light of a divine knowledge. The mental man that we are is changed into the Gnostic soul, the truth conscious Godhead, the Vijnana Maya Purusha. Seated on that level of the hill of our ascension, we are in a quite different plane from this material, this vital, this mental poise of the universal spirit. And with this change, changes too all our view and experience of our soul life and of the world around us. We are born into a new soul status and put on a new nature. For according to the status of the soul is the status of the prakriti. At each transition of the world ascent, from matter to life, from life to mind, from mind bound to free intelligence, as the latent, half-manifested, or already manifest soul rises to a higher and higher level of being, the nature also is elevated into a superior working, a wider consciousness, a vaster force, and an intenser or larger range and joy of existence. But the transition from the mind self to the knowledge self is the great and the decisive transition in the yoga. It is the shaking off of the last hold on us of the cosmic ignorance and our firm foundation in the truth of things, in a consciousness infinite and eternal, inviolable by obscurity, falsehood, suffering, or error. This is the first summit which enters into the divine perfection. Sadharmya, Sadrisya. For all the rest, only look up to it or catch some rays of its significance. The highest heights of mind or of overmind come still within the belt of a mitigated ignorance. They can refract a divine light, but not pass it on in undiminished power to our lower members. For so long as we are within the triple stratum of mind, life, and body, our active nature continues to work in the force of the ignorance, even when the soul in mind possesses something of the knowledge. And even if the soul were to reflect or to represent all the largeness of the knowledge in its mental consciousness, it would be unable to mobilize it rightly in force of action. The truth in its action might greatly increase, but it would still be pursued by a limitation, still condemned to a divisibility which would prevent it from working integrally in the power of the infinite. The power of a divinely illumined mind may be immense compared with ordinary powers, but it will still be subject to incapacity, and there can be no perfect correspondence between the force of the effective will and the light of the idea which inspires it. The infinite presence may be there in status, but the dynamis of the operations of nature still belongs to the lower prakriti, must follow its triple modes of working and cannot give any adequate form to the greatness within it. This is the tragedy of ineffectivity, of the hiatus between ideal and effective will, of our constant incapacity to work out in living form and action the truth we feel in our inner consciousness that pursues all the aspiration of mind and life towards the divinity behind them. But the vijnana or gnosis is not only truth, but truth power. It is the very working of the infinite and divine nature. It is the divine knowledge one with the divine will in the force and delight of a spontaneous and luminous and inevitable self-fulfillment. By the gnosis, then, we change our human into a divine nature. What then is this gnosis, and how can we describe it? Two opposite errors have to be avoided, two misconceptions that disfigure opposite sides of the truth of gnosis. One error of intellect-bounded thinkers takes vijnana as synonymous with the other Indian term buddhi. And buddhi, as synonymous with the reason, the discerning intellect, the logical intelligence. The systems that accept this significance pass at once from a plane of pure intellect to a plane of pure spirit. No intermediate power is recognized. No diviner action of knowledge than the pure reason is admitted. The limited human means for fixing truth is taken for the highest possible dynamics of consciousness, its topmost force and original movement. An opposite error, a misconception of the mystics, identifies vijnana with the consciousness of the infinite free from all ideation, or else ideation packed into one essence of thought, lost to other dynamic action in the single and invariable idea of the One. This is the Kaitanya Gana of the Upanishad, and is one movement, or rather one thread, of the many-aspected movement of the gnosis. The gnosis, the vijnana, is not only this concentrated consciousness of the infinite essence, it is also, and at the same time, an infinite knowledge of the myriad play of the infinite. It contains all ideation, not mental but supramental, but it is not limited by ideation, for it far exceeds all ideative movement. Nor is the Gnostic ideation in its character an intellectual thinking. It is not what we call the reason, not a concentrated intelligence. For the reason is mental in its methods, mental in its acquisitions, mental in its basis. But the ideative method of the gnosis is self-luminous, supramental. Its yield of thought light spontaneous, not proceeding by acquisition. Its thought basis a rendering of conscious identities, not a translation of the impressions born of indirect contacts. There is a relation, and even a sort of broken identity, between the two forms of thought. For one proceeds covertly from the other. Mind is born from that which is beyond mind. But they act on different planes and reverse each other's process. Even the purest reason, the most luminous rational intellectuality, is not the gnosis. Reason or intellect is only the lower buddhi. It is dependent for its action on the percepts of the sense mind and on the concepts of the mental intelligence. It is not like the gnosis, self-luminous, authentic, making the subject one with the object. There is, indeed, a higher form of the buddhi that can be called the intuitive mind or intuitive reason. And this, by its intuitions, its inspirations, its swift revelatory vision, its luminous insight and discrimination, can do the work of the reason with a higher power, a swifter action, a greater and spontaneous certitude. It acts in a self-light of the truth, which does not depend upon the torch players of the sense mind and its limited, uncertain percepts. It proceeds not by intelligent, but by visional concepts. It is a kind of truth vision, truth hearing, truth memory, direct truth discernment. This true and authentic intuition must be distinguished from a power of the ordinary mental reason, which is too easily confused with it, the power of involved reasoning that reaches its conclusion by a bound and does not need the ordinary steps of the logical mind. The logical reason proceeds pace after pace and tries the sureness of each step, like a man who is walking over unsafe ground and has to test, by the hesitating touch of his foot, each span of soil that he perceives with his eye. But this other supra-logical process of the reason is a motion of rapid insight or swift discernment. It proceeds by a stride or leap, like a man who springs from one sure spot to another point of sure footing, or at least held by him to be sure. He sees the space he covers in one compact and flashing view, but he does not distinguish or measure either by eye or touch its successions, features, and circumstances. This movement has something of the sense of power of the intuition, something of its velocity, some appearance of its light and certainty, and we always are apt to take it for the intuition. But our assumption is an error, and if we trust to it, may lead us into grievous blunders. It is even thought by the intellectualists that the intuition itself is nothing more than this rapid process in which the whole action of the logical mind is swiftly done, or perhaps half-consciously or subconsciously done, not deliberately worked out in its reasoned method. In its nature, however, this proceeding is quite different from the intuition, and it is not necessarily a truth movement. The power of its leap may end in a stumble. Its swiftness may betray. Its certainty is too often a confident error. The validity of its conclusions must always depend on a subsequent verification or support from the evidence of the sense perceptions, or a rational linking of intelligent conceptions must intervene to explain to it its own certitudes. This lower light may indeed receive very readily a mixture of actual intuition into it, and then pseudo-intuitive or half-intuitive mind is created, very misleading by its frequent luminous successes, palliating a whirl of intensely self-assured false certitudes. The true intuition, on the contrary, carries in itself its own guarantee of truth. It is sure and infallible within its limits. And so long as it is pure intuition and does not admit into itself any mixture of sense error or intellectual ideation, it is never contradicted by experience. The intuition may be verified by the reason or the sense perception afterwards, but its truth does not depend on that verification. It is assured by an automatic self-evidence. If the reason, depending on its inferences, contradicts the greater light, it will be found in the end, on ampler knowledge, that the intuitional conclusion was correct, and that the more plausible rational and inferential conclusion was an error. For the true intuition proceeds from the self-existent truth of things and is secured by that self-existent truth, and not by any indirect, derivatory, or dependent method of arriving at knowledge. But even the intuitive reason is not the gnosis. It is only an edge of light of the supermind finding its way by flashes of illumination into the mentality, like lightnings in dim and cloudy places. Its inspirations, revelations, intuitions, self-luminous discernings are messages from a higher knowledge plane that make their way opportunely into our lower level of consciousness. The very character of the intuitive mind sets a gulf of great difference between its action and the action of the self-contained gnosis. In the first place, it acts by separate and limited illuminations, and its truth is restricted to the often narrow reach or the one brief spot of knowledge lit up by that one lightning flash with which its intervention begins and terminates. We see the action of the instinct in animals. An automatic intuition in that vital or sense mind, which is the highest and surest instrument that the animal has to rely on. Since it does not possess the human light of the reason, only a cruder and yet ill-formed intelligence. And we can observe at once that the marvelous truth of this instinct, which seems so much surer than the reason, is limited in the bird, beast, or insect to some particular and restricted utility it is admitted to serve. When the vital mind of the animal tries to act beyond that restricted limit, it blunders in a much blinder way than the reason of man and has to learn with difficulty by a succession of sense experiences. The higher mental intuition of the human being is an inner visional, not a sense intuition. For it illumines the intelligence and not the sense mind. It is self-conscious and luminous, not a half-subconscious blind light. It is freely self-acting, not mechanically automatic. But still, even when it is not marred by the imitative pseudo-intuition, it is restricted in man, like the instinct in the animal, restricted to a particular purpose of will or knowledge, as is the instinct to a particular life utility or nature purpose. And when the intelligence, as is its almost invariable habit, tries to make use of it, to apply it, to add to it, it builds round the intuitive nucleus in its own characteristic fashion a mass of mixed truth and error. More often than not, by foisting an element of sense error and conceptual error into the very substance of the intuition, or by coating it up in mental additions and deviations, it not merely deflects, but deforms its truth, and converts it into a falsehood. At the best, therefore, the intuition gives us only a limited, though an intense light. At the worst, through our misuse of it, or false imitations of it, it may lead us into perplexities and confusions, which the less ambitious intellectual reason avoids by remaining satisfied with its own safe and plodding method, safe for the inferior purposes of the reason, though never a satisfying guide to the inner truth of things. Stopping mid page 480. Page 475.